session number 10409, reel 3.
Mr. Gordon Hyams, reel 3. You were telling me how you were allowed to put your hands and feet on the rudder and controls.
Yes.
To get the feeling.
Yes.
And that would help you. How did you progress from there?
Well, after that, of course, you took full control with the instructor ready to take over if you did anything silly.
And how was it? Was it a natural thing, or did you find it difficult?
No, it was fairly natural. I think it was there was no trouble in it at all. And then, of course, I was sent up on my first solo. I think you've got it.
How about your first landing, though? That's always before your solo. How did you manage that?
Moderately well, probably a little bit of a bump, because you were always rather liable to land a few feet up from the ground. And then, of course, you probably bounced a bit. But I don't think I found alighting any real difficulty, not on the Morris Farman, because you were going very slowly, and it was quite easy.
What was Travers like as an instructor?
Oh, very good. Very good indeed. Very patient, and altogether a first-class instructor.
Your first solo, then, that was...
That was, of course, a bit of an adventure, but I don't think I did anything very wrong in it. It didn't last very long. I've forgotten the...
It's on the 18th of March, 1917.
Oh.
According to this.
The 18th of March. I think I made a reasonable landing, but not a really good one.
But were you nervous?
No, I wasn't a bit nervous. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And very shortly after that, Travers's lot were moved to a subsidiary aerodrome, which was nearly nothing more than a big field, at Hainault in Essex, near Epping Forest. We had some very interesting people in the section. One of them was Henry Kendall, subsequently the actor. And I knew him very well. I was very friendly with him. He was a very nice fellow. But on one of the other flying sections, I don't know whose it was, there was Ivan Ovello, whom I'm afraid never made it. He was no good at all. And one of the instructors there also was an actor, Lawrence Irving. But anyway, to return to Hainault, we were there for 2 or 3 weeks, I suppose, and we did a lot of flying there, and it was much nicer than at Chingford, because you hadn't got to wait until other people got out of the way on the ground before you took off and that sort of thing.
Now, you then, according to yourself, you changed to an Avro 504K and you were instructed by Hayward. What do you remember about the Avro as a machine?
The Avro was a very, very fine machine, and it was the sort of standard trainer, both the RFC and the RNAS. It had... It was a rotary engine, a gnome, which took a bit of getting used to. They were rather tricky. What you had to get used to after coming off of Morris Farm was having nothing in front of you in the way of an elevator. You just had the nose of the machine. And the drill was to keep the nose as near as possible pointing at the horizon. But it didn't always apply to other machines. But at any rate, the Avro was a really lovely machine to fly. And we had no trouble at all. Landing was quite easy. And I very much enjoyed it.
I see you also were flying the Curtiss JN4.
Yes.
With Mills, F.C. Mills, as an instructor.
Yes.
What did you think of the Curtiss?
It was a very nice machine. It was a bit different to the Avro. It flew much more with its nose up in the air. And it had a stationary engine. But it was a very nice. It had a Curtiss engine, and I did my first cross country on that machine. Supposed to go to Southend, but I had some sort of a water leak or something halfway there, and I had to come back, and I did it again. No trouble at all in finding my way. They were very pleasant machines.
Were you worried by the prospect of engine failure, or had you know how to cope with it?
Oh, yes, you learned how to cope with it. And I really had no trouble at all there.
How did you find your way about in the air? Was it difficult, or...?
No, you had a map, but you more or less was only a river or something like that to follow. But it wasn't difficult.
How long did it take you to get to grips with the flying, until you felt competent? Were you competent by the time you went to Cranwell? Because you went to Cranwell round about the 1st of May.
Yes, I was quite confident. And then, of course, we did more Avro flying, and we also had a lot of lectures, and they had a sort of bomb-dropping device.
How did that work?
Oh, you were sitting on the ground. You sat in a structure, and they rolled a landscape underneath you, and you were told to pull the trigger when you thought your target was right on the sights. But otherwise...
How accurate were you at that?
Oh, not very accurate. It was... Not very accurate. Managed all right. And
was that your only training in bombing?
Beg your pardon?
Was that your only training in bombing at the time?
Yes. I think it was the only training in bombing I had.
What about air gunnery? Were you trained in that at all?
Not really. We were taught all about the Lewis gun, which was the standard gun on the our aircraft in those days, excepting some of the machines had Vickers, mostly on the fighters. But we had a certain amount of practice on that, and practice on curing faults, and then also stripping the machine to see really how it worked.
But no practice in shooting, allowing for deflection and such like?
Not as far as I know, we didn't.
Now, besides the Avro, you also flew the BE-2C at Cranwell. What did you think of that?
The BE-2C was a very widely used aircraft, and it had an awfully bad reputation of the early days of the war in the RFC as a fighting machine, and they were always known as fokker fodder. And there was one MP who was quite well known, Pemberton Billing, who used to rant about the B2 season Fokker fodder in Parliament. But I didn't do very much on those. They were rather the same as the other ones. Oh, incidentally, while I was at Chingford, Ben Travers granted me my Royal Aero Club certificate. And it was then, we were still probationary flight officers until we passed out from Cranmore. I think also we flew the Bristol Scout, which was quite a different kettle of fish. It was a very small biplane with a rotary engine, much faster and much lighter on the controls. You had to be very careful what you were doing, landing especially. And I think I only did a couple of landings. The second one was all right, and the first one, I think it was, but I burst a tire, which was quite a usual thing to happen on those days. But I extended my two flights on the Bristol to about an hour so as to do away with the fact that I had to do more landings on it. But at any rate, that was that. And
on the Bristol Scouts, I see in the notes in your log that you had Kincaid, S.M. Kincaid.
Yes, S.M. Kincaid.
What do you think of him?
Oh, he couldn't do very much in the way of instructing and sort of telling you how the thing worked and what not to do and criticisms of your handling. You see, there was no dual control or anything like that.
What kind of a man was he? He's quite well known.
Oh, yes, he was, as far as I remember, quite a quiet little fellow. Of course, he was, I've forgotten what he was. He was a flight commander, I think.
Now, before you left, you had to pass out from Cranwell. Did you have any exams in any subjects?
Do you know, I've rather forgotten if we did.
Navigation, I'm wondering about, because...
Yes, I think we had one or two on navigation and things like that. But,
Now, you did pass, and you were sent to Calshot in June 1916.
Yes. After...
What made you choose that? Were you given a
No,
choice?
You were... I wanted to fly seaplanes, and I was sent to Calshot. I was listed as a potential seaplane pilot. After passing out of Cranmore, you were promoted to flight sub-lieutenant and put your first ring up. The very funny thing was that pilots were given RN commissions, while all other branches like observers and air gunners and whatnot were given RNVR. And we were very proud of the fact that we were RN. Anyway, I went home for two or three days, I think, and then proceeded to Calshot.
What was the setup at Calshot when you arrived? How was the base organised?
Well, we lived on one side of the river in a place called Warsash, in a very nice country house, very comfortable there, and we crossed over to Calshot on the other side of the water in a paddle steamer. Calshot was very difficult to describe. It was, there were very few buildings there, just the hangars. There was one permanency there which always amused us. It was known as the Flying Glass House. I don't know what the machine was. It was, it had never flown, but it was a huge machine which was on land, and everything glass windows everywhere. But at any rate, we first flew one type of short seaplane.
That's the 150 short.
150 short with a 150 sub-beam engine. And I waited two or three days before I was taken up by my instructor, who was a flight lieutenant at Maitland. And he said, there's a machine just come out of the workshops which I want to test. You better come with me. Was that anything? So in due course, I took the front seat in this machine and he got into the pilot seat. It was a very hot, windless day. And he opened up the engines and started to try and take off. Well, we dashed across with ever-increasing speed over the water, and he was trying to lift the tail so as to be able to lift the nose of the machine. And very shortly, it did just leave the air, when suddenly there was a loud bang, and water, hot water, shot over me through the exhaust pipe of the engine, which was sticking up in the air just above me. Any rate, he made a landing, and what had happened was that one of the pistons, I think, had gone through one of the cylinders, and that was that. Any rate, we got down on the water, and we got out, as was the proper practice, and stood on the floats so as to keep the weight off the tail and prevent it from sinking, because when they sank, they usually whipped over backwards. Any rate, after quite a long time, a motorboat came out from Calshot and took us in tow, and hadn't gone very far before that broke down. So there we were, stuck for another hour or so. And eventually, I think something came up and towed us in. Anyway, that was my first experience of seaplanes. Then...
Did you soon get the hang of flying them?
Oh, yes. They were much heavier than the land machines. And they were rather lumbering old machines, but they were very easy to fly and very easy to land, provided that you had some sort of a ripple on the surface of the water. Otherwise, if you came down on an absolutely flat surface in brilliant sunshine, you got the reflection of the machine on the water, and you never knew it was a temptation to land well up in the air and then bonk. But at any rate, I did a few flights on those and thoroughly enjoyed it.
I see you also, towards the end of your time there in July, were put on practicing in photography, spotting and bomb dropping. Do you remember anything about that?
Not very much. But of course, otherwise, after the short, I was taught to fly a comic machine called an FBA.
Yes, that's when you were doing that, yeah.
Franco-British Association, which was a small flying boat with an open cockpit. You were sitting almost level with the surface of the water, and it had a monosuperb gnome, which was 100 horsepower, and it was different from the ordinary gnome engine in that it had one valve which acted both as an inlet and exhaust, and it was also very tricky and liable to catch fire. We got quite used to that. To start the engine up, you had to stand on your seat. The engine was up on the wings, at the rear part of the wings, and there was a big starting handle hanging down out of the machine, and you stood on your seat, wound this up, and almost immediately, as soon as it did start, it caught fire, which was nothing at all, because you simply opened the throttle and blew it out. And that was the usual practice. Now, they were very difficult machines in many ways to fly. They had a very bad gliding angle, and your endeavour was to get the nose well down when you were coming down before you cut off the petrol and switched off the engine. And they were also a little bit tricky to land. You had to judge your distance from the water surface fairly well and then swish the tail in.
While you were there, do you remember any of the people you were there with?
Yes, a few.
There was the commanding officer, I think, Bigsworth.
Bigsworth was the commanding officer, and the senior instructor was a madman, the name of Deville. And he was completely mad. He used to do the most ridiculous things. And his coup de grace, shortly after I'd left, was flying a sop with baby seaplane around. And I think he was reading a book at the same time. At any rate, he flew smack into one of the big tall masts on Whale Island, wireless masts. And luckily enough, it stuck with its nose in this mast, and the machine was just out, the horizontal outside. And he was eventually rescued by a sailor who climbed up and hauled him out somehow or other. Anyway, he got the Albert Medal for it, but he was a completely...
How did his madness show itself?
Oh, the things he used to say and his whole actions were comic. But at any rate, that was that.
What about Bigsworth? What was he like?
Oh, we saw very little of him. Very little indeed.
What about Ben? He was Tony Benn's father, I think you told
me. Oh,
that.
Yes.
He
was a delightful old boy. He was much older than all the rest of us, but mucked in everything. And one day we had to, what they called coal ship, in other words, unload a barge of coal onto the station. And he joined in, all the rest of them had got filthy dirty and everything else. He was really a very nice bloke. He didn't make it as a pilot, but he became an observer. And I think, as far as I can remember, I don't know the details, but he did very well indeed as an observer.
What was his actual name?
His name? Wedgwood Ben, but I don't know what his first name was.
Fine. So, do you remember anything else about your period at Calshot? Because you left in July, around about
yes.
the 20th.
No, I don't think I do remember very much in the way of details.
How were you getting on in the service? Were you very proud of the RNAS?
Oh, yes. I think we all were.
What did you feel about the Royal Flying Corps? Did you feel a kinship with them, or were you...
We really didn't think very much about them.
Did you feel closer to the Navy?
Yes, definitely. I mean, we were... It was dinned into us, but we were naval officers. And our messes were all naval messes. And we followed the naval tradition of sitting during the loyal toast. I dare say you may know how that originated, how one of the Georges was dining on board one ship, and as he rose, he bumped his head on the beams above and ordained that henceforth naval messes should drink the loyal toast sitting.
Now, Calshot was a training base, as far as you were
yes.
concerned. That's correct, isn't it?
Yes.
Did you passed out successfully then?
Oh, yes.
And you were posted to Westgate.
Yes.
Round about the 20th of July.
Yes. Well,
what was the setup there?
What was the
setup there? How was the station organised?
I can't remember very much about it. We were flying shorts on local patrols, which were known as shipping protection patrols, up and down the coast. And also, I had my first introduction to the Sopwith Snider, which was the original version of the Sopwith baby seaplane, the chief difficulty difference being in the engines. The Sopwith Snider had a monosuper gnome, while the Sopwith baby had a Clerget rotary, which was a very fine engine indeed and quite different in handling to the monosuper gnome.
What did you think of the Sopwith?
Oh, I loved it. I did fairly well on my first. The CO flying was Flight Commandant Norman Sholto Douglas. He was a very nice bloke. And he more or less told you how to fly it and this, that and the other. And then you were pushed off, and I made quite a good take off and landing on that, and it was a really lovely machine to fly. We also had a few Sopwith baby seaplanes with the Clerget there, but I never flew those. The more senior pilots under we weren't under instruction then, really. We were supposed to be doing a rather menial job in patrolling.
What was the job then, the shipping protection patrol?
Looking for submarines. Accompanying some of the small convoys up and down the coast, and altogether just scouting around and looking to see if there were any submarines. I think we had bombs on board us, I'm sure we did, 65-pounders. But it was...
Did you stick close to the convoys, or would you just fly up and down?
There again, I don't think we saw many. Most of them, the convoys hadn't developed properly then. The ships were going up and down singly, and they suffered for it for quite a time afterwards.
Did you see any submarines?
Not there.
Did you see any ships that were in trouble or something?
No, nothing like that.
Had you had any practice at spotting submarines? Because it's not a...
No, none at all.
Would it be fair to say you were pretty inexperienced?
Oh, yes, we were. Of course, we were very close to the aerodrome at Manston, which was also a naval place, but they had Sopwith babies and other machines, and they used to go up whenever we had an air raid by the German Gothas, but they never were able to get anywhere near them.